also staying strong while I'm going and I'm striving. I'm relying on myself for as long as I'm surviving. Taking no excuses, cause your words are just useless. Kick off the dust and let's do this.
Hello and welcome to Remedy, a human awakening. A forum where we discuss the challenges we face as humans navigating today's fast-paced modern society. Today, Corey and I are going to be talking about habits and how they're a part of our everyday lives. As you've been listening over the last couple, we're at 9 now episodes. That's big time. That's big. We're one away from 10 here. So that's a big deal, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to beat out what, half of all podcasters that don't make it to 10.
Goddamn right we did.
If not, I just made up that statistic. So
I'd say 50% of the time we beat everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have, in essence, we've made recording this podcast a habit and something that was near and dear to us. We wanted to make sure that we stuck with it and got to that magic 10 that apparently 50% of people never do. So we had to create some habits within ourselves to do that. So today we wanted to talk about habits, how we form them, how we form good ones, how we form bad ones, and really just the overall theory behind habits and where they come from and how they come about. So one of the things I've done leading up to this was actually read a book called, oddly enough, Habits. And it is by, it's called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. I don't know if I'm even pronouncing his name right. Duhigg. And it's a great book. I read it when I was on vacation recently. And it really lays out a lot of really powerful stuff about habits and how they're developed, why we have them, where they came from in the first place. And when you think about it, we all are creatures of habits. We have to have habits to function. And I didn't really think of it in these terms, so I started reading that book and then some other ones on the topic as well. But in reality, habits allow you to do something that's repetitive, so your brain doesn't really have to hold on to that information exactly. And the way that it holds on to information, it locks it away, so you don't have to basically relearn it every time. And one of the examples is like tying your shoes. If you had to think about tying your shoes every time, like, how do I tie my shoes? I have to relearn that. I have to figure out how to do that. We couldn't function. And so obviously our brain is an evolution of smaller little organisms that learned big things. And then, and as our brain got bigger and more evolved and more complex, your brain can figure out habits and lock these habits away as things. So your computing power is more present for other more important things instead of each time, how do I tie my shoes? And it's really the reason that you're able to get in your car, think about 10 other things, whether it's safe or not, it's not open for this discussion, but you can be on autopilot and you get in your driveway and you're like, I'm not even sure how the hell I got here. Because it's a habit. You've done it multiple times. And habits are, I think, one of those really important things when they're healthy habits and then can be really limiting when they're unhealthy habits. So back when I used to work in law enforcement, I had the habit every day of getting dressed a certain fashion, putting all my gear at the end of my shift. It all went in a certain place. And then when I started my shift, I was ready for that stuff in that place. And one of the best examples I can give you of somebody getting off their habit was we went to do a high-risk stop of some burglars and thieves and wanted felonious type people. And so they were parked in front of this mini mart and we all come screeching in the parking lot, guns drawn, hands up, freeze, we're the police. And I look over and I see my sergeant with an abnormally small gun in his hand. I was like, well, that's not his fucking gun. What the hell is that? So we do our thing. We get done. And I go over and ask him, I was like, what you holding there, Sarge? And he's like, oh, you saw that? I'm like, oh yeah, I did. And that is not your normal duty weapon. He's like, fuck. I normally put my gun in a very specific spot in my locker, as we all do. We all have our little habit. And today I moved that gun to do something else. And I put it here. And he goes, and I specifically thought about, I don't know why I'm putting it there, but something happened and he changed his little habit. So in the process of getting dressed, he hears this call come out that we're going to need help stopping this car. And he just like throws the rest of his shit on, runs down to his car, gets in it, and as he's driving, he realizes he doesn't have his gun in his holster, and all he had was his backup, which was in a bag or something like that. And he's like, because I didn't do my habit. And I'm like, man. And those are the things that can trip us up when we get off of our habit. So I think creating habits is a really good thing for us. But then also what we all want to discuss today too is how habits can become extremely limiting when you have quote unquote bad habits.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest differences are cognitive habits and non-cognitive habits, you know, things that we're doing without even considering why we're doing it. You know, I think a lot of those happen to be limiting.
You know, yeah. One of the quotes from the book was, or how he laid out what a habit is quoting him, habit is a choice that we deliberately make at some point and then stop thinking about, but continue doing often every day. So we think of those things that sometimes are choices, but in reality, they're not. They're choices that are driven by habits. And so that's one of the things that we really want to kind of dive into today is especially for the negative stuff. You know, if you have very positive habits, yeah, absolutely. Keep those things up, recognize them, like pat yourself on the back that you have that and go with that. But I think probably the bigger discussion point is those habits that you have that are detrimental. Maybe they're causing us to gain weight because they're eating habits, they're shitty sleeping habits, which I'll talk more about myself personally. Habits that we get into and how we talk to family and friend and spouses and stuff like that. We're creatures of habits. And I think we're not really aware of how these things are happening because they're so prevalent in our life. And one of the things that he really identified in that book was the habit loop. And it's this continuous loop of a cue with a routine and a reward. And we're just constantly cycling through that in almost everything we do. And there comes a point during the discussion is at what point do habits become the thing that completely drive everything, and like how prevalent are habits? Where does the discussion of this is a habit versus this is a choice, because they overlap so much, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're not paying attention, you don't have the perceived control over your response to that situation. You know, so I think it's demonstrating awareness and taking more responsibility of what it is that we're doing and understanding that there are choices, and that if we are seeing results that aren't desirable or indicative of our goals, then we need to slow down and identify what it is that we're doing so we can recognize the good and bad habits and how we can build upon those ones that are positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's so important to identify. Really what you're trying to identify is what is the routine that I'm in if you want to change it. Like, again, some things are really good. And I think it's also probably important to think about, okay, so if this routine's not serving me, maybe it's not like a bad routine, but it's just my daily routine isn't getting me to where I want it to be. It could be it's not as detrimental as, well, every time I'm a little stressed or every time this happens, I go eat a Snickers bar and now I'm gaining weight and I'm way overweight and I feel like shit because my eating habits are really poor, but those are driven by a lot of other things. So let's just say you want to change something in your life to...
Well, I mean, I think sleep's a great example for you, right?
Yeah.
And how that adversely affects your life at times. And I know food, you know, consistency and action definitely affects mine. So, I mean, if you want to go first and I can follow up, you know, my own example with food.
Yeah, for sure. My sleep habits are absolutely fucking horrendous because 20 years in law enforcement, and the overwhelming majority of those were on a not day shift. I think in 20 years, I worked exactly 2 day shifts and it was miserable for me. Like, not just 2 shifts, but 2 rotations, and a rotation was like 3 or 4 months. Horrible, miserable experience. The only time I've been massively late in my life was on that 1 day shift when I woke up. Supposed to be there at 5:30, and I woke up about 7:30, 7:45 to go to the bathroom. I was like, I feel like I'm missing something today. Oh shit. Yeah, that'd be work. So I have to call my sergeant. Hey boss, I'll be there. He's like, that's fine. Your letter's waiting for you when you get here. So it wasn't for me, but night shift worked well. So I worked either noon to 10. I worked swing shift, which was from usually like 3:30 in the afternoon to 1:30 in the morning, or a larger majority of it was from graveyards, which either was from 7 to 7 at night when I was working in the jail, or oftentimes from 10 p.m. to 8 a.m. And so that's what my sleep life is around, is sleeping alternative. And when you work swing, or when you work shift work like that, night shift stuff, you routinely trade sleep for life, because well, there's some things that we can't even control. We have court, we have this, if you work during the week. So you have to be up during the day for all the things that come from a law enforcement career. And then if you have family stuff, you have all this stuff. So you just have to develop really poor sleeping habits. And then on top of that, on my days off, I got in the habit of staying up quite late and just falling asleep on the couch and being asleep on the couch till probably 5 or 6 in the morning, getting up, going into bed for a couple hours. And then obviously not using caffeine responsibly, as I sit here and look at a Bang Energy drink, which, by the way, if they want to sponsor us, more than welcome to send us cases of Miami Cola Bang Energy, and I'll be a happy person. Even though I'm trying to limit it and be more responsible, change my habits, if you will, of that. But my sleep habits are just terrible. And so now being, out in law enforcement and trying to be healthier in those habits, there are some things that are ingrained. And then again, it kind of goes to what is a habit and what is just more my natural cycle. I think my whole life I've been more prone to being able to be awake, and I'm a night person. I am not a morning person. And I think, in doing a lot of the research I have, there are two types of that. So I trend more towards the night person anyways. However, that's not super conducive to the life I live now. And with a new baby coming very soon, that might actually help me out a lot. Definitely not going to help Liz out. But maybe that's a good mix, but I need to have better sleeping habits. So I'm really trying to change that stuff. And I find myself really, really struggling with the, like, Liz goes to bed at probably 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night. I'm like, okay. And I know I really should go to bed right then, but I'm like, no, I got to watch this YouTube video, or nothing productive, mind you. I can't go to bed then. And if I do, I just lay there and it's not productive. So I struggle with that.
I wonder if it's attractive to you for the same reason that getting up extra early for me is, in the sense that it's my own time, right? You're not getting, generally not receiving a lot of text messages, emails, phone calls, right? People aren't just showing up. They're not intruding in your life or, you know, trying to interact with you.
Right.
You know, so you have this autonomy to kind of do as you please, and you're not having to be mindful of others and their expectations of you, you know, and you can just go about what you want. And if you're able to satisfy whatever the offset of that is through use of caffeine or, you know, stimulants and things like that, then it's not a big deal, you know, and that's definitely, I mean, for me, that's why I get up so early in the morning, is that I need to have my own time. I know that that's a key contributing factor to my overall success, is if I can make sure that my mind's right and I've gotten the things that I want to get done without having to be distracted by other people, my overall disposition's much better.
Right.
But if I decide to stay up until 11 or 12 o'clock at night and then that 3:30 alarm goes off, you know, it sucks.
Yeah.
And I have to make the decision, do I get up or do I not? And then if I get up, then I'm usually pretty tired, and that fucks me up for a few days, you know, or if I decide, no, I'm not going to do it, I feel behind and now I'm stressed out that entire day.
Right.
And then it's like, I have to get back on this, you know, program of, you know, going to bed at a reasonable time and then getting up.
Yeah. Your habit. And the habit has to be, we all need certain amounts of sleep. So it's not, you can go like, I can stay up till 3:30 and then get up at 6:30. You can't run that for a long time.
Yeah. It's not sustainable.
I tried that. It doesn't work well. and I got to a point with, and I'm sure we'll cover it in future podcasts and stuff, with PTSD and all kinds of different stuff, where I just literally couldn't sleep. I would go days on end without sleeping, at all. It's not a good thing, but my record is 4 hours of sleep in a 64-hour period. So, and not all four at the same time.
Yeah, that's insane. I don't think I've made it past 30.
Yeah, I would routinely do it. Like, and this is the shit part with having terrible sleep habits. There's some things that and I try to explain this to Liz and people that are like, well, you should try to do this. And I go, but I did it for so long. Again, my habit now is this. My first night back at work every single time was, if I got up at 10 a.m. and I slept in, like, I slept in till 10 a.m. that morning. And then I was awake all day, and I'm not really like, oh, I could lay down at 6 p.m. and try to sleep for 2 hours before I went to work. And I went to work at 9 because my shift started at 10, and I worked all night till 8 a.m., got off, got home. By the time I got back into bed, if I was really doing good, maybe 9:30 or 10, I'm awake for 24 hours at that point. Just boom, just like that, without even trying. And you look at that and go, like, how would you break that up? Can you, if you go to sleep the night prior to that, and maybe you stay up till 2 a.m. and try to sleep till 2 p.m. and then wake, like, you're just fucked every just way. So it's, you can develop these habits as a inadvertent, they just are, right? And some of my eating habits, I know you're going to talk about your eating habits here in a second, but some of my eating habits are directly related to working in an area that was very rural. And the only thing open in the middle of the night was Jack in the Box. And I didn't like taking my food and sitting and eating with my little lunchbox in the break room in the middle of the frickin' night and eating a sandwich. It wasn't mentally good for me, even though body and physical wise, it probably would. So I developed some shit eating habits out of it, which, like, share yours. What are your eating habits that are holding you back?
Well, I think it's a culmination of habits. And the irony for me that I've been able to identify within myself is the more successful I am in accomplishing my goals, both personally and professionally, the more apt I'm able, or the more likely I'm able to spend the time making a healthy meal. Hmm. So the busier I am, the more wins I have in a day, I want to continue that momentum. So it's like, okay, I'm going to cook up some chicken, make a salad. I'm going to eat really well.
That's usually the antithesis of what most people, the busier I am, the less I have time to actually cook for myself.
Right. And the less I do, uh-huh, the less I'm willing to do good for myself.
So it's kind of a self-loathing thing.
Oh yeah. Like, it's just like, well, you know, today's a shit show. Let's just keep it going. And I'll find happiness in that double bacon Western cheeseburger, right? Or just something stupid.
Damn you to hell for even saying that in front of me right now.
And every time I do it, now that I'm getting older, I feel like shit afterwards. And then it's that I have this internal conversation of like, well, you fucked today up, mm-hmm, and you feel like shit. What's tomorrow going to be like? And then if I don't get a good night's sleep, I'm probably going to make another series of shitty mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I think I used to live my life like that, but like, I would say like within months, like I would just have a shitty month. Like, and I would just double down on those bad decisions. I would still get my job done. I would do the things I needed to do. I wasn't winning. I wasn't happy in any capacity. And I probably wasn't the best friend or, you know, person to be around. But when I'm succeeding, when I do wake up and I start getting shit done, I start handling things, I want to maintain that momentum. It's like, okay, well, let's clean the house. Let's do these things, you know? And the biggest thing that's hurting me now is I'm being able to develop better habits, is trying to figure out how do I integrate my wife into those habits.
Yeah.
Like, because now, you know, being married and co-parenting and these things, like, I can't just do everything the way that I want to do. And that would be super easy for me, and I'd probably be more successful, but I wouldn't be happy because we wouldn't have our own interaction and our relationship. And I think that me getting what I want would come at the expense of her getting some of the things that she wants. So that's not fair to her. So I'm trying to navigate, like, what are healthy habits for you? What are healthy habits for me? And where can we work on these things together? And where do we need to be independent? And so that's been the exercise that we've been going through regarding habits, is trying to get her to identify those things within herself, because I think I'm a little bit further down the road than she is in the self-betterment, self-exploration, you know, aspect of things, of trying to understand, why do I do things? Why do I have the relationships that I have? Obviously, you and I have had a ton of those conversations. We've talked about a lot of these different points, you know, on the previous podcast. So it's, for me, it's, if I don't do the things that I know that'll allow me to be successful, like getting up in the morning and just getting my job done, just handling my shit, yeah, maintaining the relationships that I need to with our staff and partners and things like that, I will fuck up at the end of the day. It's not a matter of, you know, well, I'm going to fuck up. So not doing the things that I need to do will always result in me failing in some capacity. And so now I'm trying to figure out, how do I mitigate that failure? Do I have an unhealthy expectation of what success is? Do I expect too much to where that's not sustainable? And in turn, I've engineered a system that's going to cause me some form of failure, which is why I'm on this perpetual roller coaster of success and failure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so now, I know we're going to be talking about it on the next episode, but journaling, right?
Yeah.
You know, where you like to write things down. I don't really like to. I like things kind of being digital. So now, you know, I'm trying to track the things that I do in a day. I'm trying to identify what's good and what's bad, what's successful, what's not successful, you know, so I can continue to analyze what is causing me to end up at this place of success or the place of failure.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's like so fitting, a quote that I have from another book I read that, from Dan Crenshaw, his book's Fortitude. And it's not just specifically around this topic, but he does have a, chapter in there on habits. And it's such a great quote for right where we're at in here is, my mental outcomes were a consequence of my habits, and my habits were a consequence of my choices. So a lot of times we kind of go like, oh, okay, well, my habits are this or that. And so my habits are as though they're independent of our mental health. And so what I think we would want you to think about is looking at this as a whole encompassing thing that, let's say you're struggling with mental health issues, you're struggling with depression, you're struggling with anxiety, you're struggling with a lot of different stuff that people are faced with every day that we all are. And you look at that and go, okay, so that's this over here. And it's very compartmentalized, but over here I have unhealthy eating habits, or I have unhealthy, physical like activity habits, or I have unhealthy, mental self-talk habits and stuff. And that's compartmentalized over here. And what I think we would encourage you to do is look at it as it's all encompassing. Those things don't exist on islands by themselves. One gets the other. If you're unhappy with the choices you're making daily, which are driven by the habits that you have, that is directly related to how you feel. And the best example I can give you of that is on my own journey over these last couple of years was struggling with being really efficient on journaling and time blocking. And in episode 10, we are specifically going to cover that exactly. But when I have a little more control over my daily habits, my mental health improves. And the days where I feel worse and the weeks that I feel worse, which leads into months of feeling worse, is directly related to when I let the habits that I'm trying to improve slip and I fall back into those very familiar habits because it's very familiar. And I'll use that shoe tying analogy. Let's say like everybody knows how to tie their shoes the way they learned. And I guarantee you, if you watch somebody else tie shoes, you look at that and go, the fuck are you doing? Like, how do you tie your shoes that way? I've seen some like random things and go, oh, whoa, I would never think of tying my shoes that way. So try to tie your shoes differently. Try that tomorrow. You couldn't do it. It wouldn't work. And you'd have to like practice. You'd feel like what age did you learn to tie your shoes? I don't even remember. 3, 4, 7, 12, something like that.
Depends on the kid.
True.
Or the parents, I should say.
Some 20-year-olds these days probably can't tie their shoes.
I see a lot of Velcro shoes out there.
Mm-hmm. I bet you somebody right now is living at home with their parents and of driving age, and their mom still ties their shoes. Not that that's wrong. I'm not judging you for it. I'm just saying maybe it's time to branch out, learn to tie your shoes yourself. But if you tried to tie your shoes differently tomorrow, you would struggle doing it. And you would have to relearn that habit that we have done tens of thousands of times. So if you think about that, these things that we do daily, subconsciously, over and over and over and over again, and how hard it is to change the course of that habit to something that's more productive or more healthy. And you look at that and go, okay, well, I'm just going to give up trying because it's hard. Well, you're trying to undo something that you spent a lot of time doing, or that the reward for such was high value. It's a high value reward, which buys into and solves this problem that you have when we're talking about the cue, which is a routine, which is then the reward, which is your habit loop. If that reward is really high value and is solving that problem for you, those first two things are going to be very hard to change. The routine itself is really what we're trying to change. So that becomes really tough to do. That becomes a really challenging thing to do. So whether it's Corey's eating or my sleeping or our productivity, which we'll talk about more in episode 10 with journaling and taking control of your day. I think it's really important to just start with smaller things. I think what we're all too apt to do when trying to change habits is go, okay, today I need to, and I'm pounding my fist. Sorry if you hear something in the background. I'm like, I'm really animated here. I'm pounding my fist in anger on my chair here. today I will, I'm going to change my eating habits. I'm going to wake up early and I'm going to like go run and I'm going to do, and then I'm going to journal. And then it's like, okay, slow down here, Slappy. Fucking like, how about we try to change one of those things at a time? And maybe it's like 30 days you work on changing this thing. I'm going to wake up today and I'm going to wake up at 8 a.m. every morning, whether I needed to be up at 9 or not, every day. And in the process of waking up, I won't hit the snooze button. And that's it. And that's all you focus on. Because I think the audacity for us sometimes is we just really overachieve and go like, I can change it all day. It's like the old standard, your New Year's resolutions. I'm going to do all this shit on January 1st. And then nobody does it by like January 15th or so. So you have to be selective in what you're doing, have a game plan for it. We'll talk a little bit more about plans here as we move through this, and then be strategic in how you're implementing that plan.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because, you know, we're always looking for, you know, I guess a good way of saying it is an escalator or an elevator to the top, mm-hmm. right? To
like a stairway to heaven or
no. I hope people aren't looking for death, but,
do you really not know that song? Stairway to Heaven.
What are we talking about here?
Led Zeppelin, maybe one of the greatest songs ever.
I'm just trying to hurt your brain.
It's not hard to do really at this stage in the game today.
but no, it's just, you know, that we're always looking for these shortcuts or these hacks, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that it's just everyone's selling these convenient solutions. And we're just like, oh, well, I just got to find the thing for me. You know, the solution doesn't come from within. It comes from this thing that I'm going to purchase. It comes from this product that I'm going to take. It comes from, oh, if I buy this new computer or if I do this, then in turn, I'll find the success that I'm looking for. And what it comes down to is a lot of, you know, hard work that you have to put in there. Yeah. If you can't tell, we're over here. Ashley just realized that writing on a metal table is probably not the best idea.
Could you hear that?
So loud. Just like, it was so loud. There's no hiding what that was.
Sorry, folks.
Yeah, it's okay. You're getting what you're paying for. So
yeah, exactly. You want a higher level of productivity here? That Bang Energy sponsorship better come through tomorrow.
Yeah. Instead of a GoFundMe page, because you know what? I don't rely on myself to make money. I rely on others to give it to me. But no, the point is ouch. That. I think that, and I think definitely that should be an episode that we do, right? It's goal setting.
Yeah.
I think that's a very important thing because when we're looking to seek change in our lives, to your point, we might seek too much change or expect it to come too fast. And I'm learning with myself, you know, through these various transformations I've gone through and trying different things that the quote unquote goal from where I'm starting can't be too far out that I lose interest. I lose the motivation. It can't be too easy to obtain because then I give myself this false sense of entitlement that I've succeeded. Therefore I can stop working on these other things. So I think really understanding how to motivate yourself and how to maintain that motivation, you know, through, whether it's some type of reward or affirmation from others that you're seeking, you know, is to really put thought into that. And that's going to help increase the likelihood of finding success and developing these new habits and strategies that you're implementing in your life.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point to throw in another quote here. This is going to be a quote one because I did a lot of research on this and wrote them down this time. It's also from The Power of Habits, but he quoted somebody else named Angela Duckworth. And it says, sometimes it looks like people with great self-control aren't working hard, but that's because they've made it automatic. So, a little closer. I'm getting the talking to the mic, stupid. Sorry. Bush league shit over here.
That's all right. But no, I mean, it totally makes sense.
It's, I think we look at some people that have great habits and kind of think they have it all together and stuff. And what they've done is they've just done the work ahead of time and just said, every day, I'm not going to negotiate with myself. I'm going to get up and I'm going to do whatever it is. But I guarantee if you ask those people that look like they have it all together, there's probably areas in their life that they're struggling with still. And they're like, okay, so I have some unhealthy habits over here. Maybe this person's highly motivated and highly driven and doing all of these things and seem like they got all together, but they consume shit tons of caffeine as a stress response or lots of different things, you know, like,
let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. How do you start your day?
Pooping.
Okay. What do you do while you're pooping?
Well, scroll social media, unfortunately.
Okay. So you start your day off by viewing a false reality.
Yeah.
Right. It's a falsehood.
Right.
You know, I don't post the shitty parts of my life generally on social media.
Right.
Not for the fact that I'm trying to hide it from anyone. I just don't want to have the conversation for all the people out there that feel the need to solve my problem.
Sure.
But it's my fault for putting it out there.
Right.
And especially if I, you know, phrase whatever the comment underneath the post or whatever it is, if, oh, I'm struggling with this, you know, I appreciate the fact that I have people in my life that want to help, you know, but at the end of the day, it's up for me to resolve. Right. But so now you're starting your day. Your habit is to start your day with unrealistic expectations.
And that's a habit I was actually trying to change for a while and fell off the wagon, because where I was changing the habit changed. I was changing it at home, and then I went on vacation, and then I was like, oh, I fell off that habit. My habit was I wanted to not engage with my phone before 10 a.m. and I was waking up at 8. So I was waking up, I was purposely reading, doing some breathing exercises, pooping, taking a cold shower, because that's a habit which oddly enough has stuck. I still am doing that almost daily. I would say average of 6 times a week.
And that's one of the things that really fucked you over on phase one.
Right. And oddly, yeah, phase one of 75 hard. Once we did the 75 hard, and then phase one is you add a 5-minute cold shower in there, and it mentally was tough. And I think for me, it was that tough thing that I really want to stay. And I guarantee you, almost every morning, some mornings I kind of look forward to it, but there's almost every morning, this morning especially, I'm not feeling especially well. Maybe after my last mask rant in episode 8, I actually caught COVID. I don't know. I think it's actually more allergies, but I feel like shit. And it's been a long week, and I've been up super late because of some inadvertent dog stuff. And this morning I looked at that shower and I actually turned it on. I stood just outside the water, like the stream's going right in front of my face sideways, and I'm like splashing the cold water on my face. I kind of stuck my face in a little bit, and I'm like, that's probably enough. I did it. And I was like, just get in the water, asshole, you know? And I like stood in front of it, but I very specifically had an argument with myself about how uncomfortable. And some mornings it's like, I just walk into it and it's not that big a deal. But it really was, I think for me, that mental thing that I realized I struggled with it the most, that's one of those things in Western society we become super accustomed to, is warm showers. But if you think about it, in the history of humans, it was not that long ago that was a complete luxury. Every once in a while, you might get a hot bath a couple, every times a month. The old saying, like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, came from people got to bathe like once a year, and it was based on age in the home. And so the baby was the last one in this dirty ass water. Google it if you don't believe me. That's really where it came from. But it's a luxury that we're afforded now. And yet we've all become so accustomed to it. We stand there every morning and relish this warm water, when a large segment of the world population probably doesn't even have access to that. And we stand here and go like, I'm going to die if I get into that cold water. And in reality, like, no, your body's actually programmed for that. But I'm having this argument with myself that every morning, and it kind of actually even leads to another quote from Dan Crenshaw. And the reason I love that book, Fortitude, was it covered a lot of different things, and habits, some of it, but mental toughness. And I really think it's a great book for people to read if you want, from Dan Crenshaw. He's a representative from Texas in the United States Congress. And it said, what you should do is scatter challenges throughout your life. The nature and value of those challenges depend on you. And these aren't singular big goal challenges either, which segue is kind of what Corey and I are talking about. Small incremental changes to making habits, not my goal is like, I am going to start a new company today. This is just small life-changing things. So back to the quote, the pursuit of meaningful suffering must be habitual. It must be a new part of your routine where you dedicate yourself to occasional bouts of self-imposed suffering, because deep down, you know, you have become too soft. And that's kind of like, as I read that quote, I was thumbing through some stuff today that I had marked up when I read the book and thinking of things I want to include in today's episode. I came across that quote that I had highlighted and was like, that's exactly what happened today when it came to the shower thing. I was like, you're just soft, you little bitch. Just walk into the fucking water. It doesn't have to be 5 minutes at this point. I'm not on that self-imposed thing, but stay in there long enough to get over your uncomfortableness of doing this. Because I know I was about one lever turn away from shutting that shower off. I'm like, well, I splashed some cold water on my face. Good enough. Get on with my day. And I sell myself that story. Oh, I don't have enough time to get in there. I don't have this. I don't have that. And it was like, that's a habit I'm trying to stick with, because I've fallen off the wagon of those other habits I was just talking about, of trying to move away from hitting snooze too long in the morning. So snoozing myself through about 8:30 to 8:45, which is not conducive to returning my sleep habits. It's really screwing me up in the mornings, is hitting that snooze button too long. And then now I'm back in the bad habit of grab my phone and immediately start just sit down on the old throne and start scrolling through mind-numbing, worthless shit, so to speak.
Yeah. It's really interesting because I think perspective is very important when it comes to habits. And it's just that conversation that you're having with yourself, because you could overcomplicate it. I know I've done that, you know, especially when I don't want to do something or something is inconvenient. My internal dialogue will be incredibly fucking complicated and framed in the sense of I'm either the victim or this is no longer important. You know, and so that way I can feel good about not accomplishing it, right? Why I tried, you know, I the fact that I got up in the morning and I was going to take a cold shower is better than, you know, like, fuck. Either you do or you don't, right? Either you're executing or you're not, you know, but at the end of the day, don't fucking lie to yourself, right? I think that's been the thing I've struggled most with in my own life is not only trying to frame what type of perspective I want others to have of me, like in my young adult life, I was very insecure, and trying to manage other people's perceptions of my own to the point where I started to believe the bullshit that I was sharing with others, you know? And so everything that I did was to uphold, you know, that persona that I had created of myself.
So you had like a dysmorphic view of the story that you were selling to the world. You began believing.
Yeah. Not in like the narcissistic sense. Like I knew that it was bullshit, but it became very easy to go, no. Like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm living this life. I'm making these things happen. You know, I'm this person. Mm-hmm. So much so that I just wasn't having to face who I really was and the things that were bothering me as an individual.
Yeah, that makes sense. You
know, and so, and I don't know if I ever said it on any of their other previous podcasts, right? But like that day of reckoning, right? The transformation, if you will, was the day that my wife told me she was pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
Like that was like,
and you were like, is it mine?
No, it was it's funny because we'd only been dating for a few weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, like literally, like we did not know each other. Like,
did you not know where babies come from?
No, I just apparently, along with a lot of other things in my life, I just didn't care.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I was doing what felt good, you know, including cheeseburgers and, you know, making babies.
Yeah. cheeseburgers and unprotected sex.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's a fucking t-shirt right there.
It sure is. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so.
Merch store coming soon.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll never forget it because she's like, hey, I have a surprise for you. I want you to go wait in the garage. And this is at her house.
And these days you'd be like, is it a new bike?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 That or she bought some crazy shit and it's stowed in the garage and I'm going to go fucking have to figure out what I'm going to do with it. So she's like, hey, and she's like, okay, you can come in. I open up the door. She's nowhere to be seen. And I can see, I saw the string of a balloon. Cause like the way that the door was from the garage through the kitchen, there's like overhanging cabinets over the island. So you couldn't see across the living room, but I could see like there's a string that you wouldn't see like on a balloon. So I take a whole steps in and it says, congratulations. And about halfway down, there's a fucking pregnancy test tied to it.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, I know what the fuck that is. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I walk over and I look at it and I'm just like, oh, yep. Okay, I'm pretty sure this means you're fucked. And I'm like, yo,
what did you do?
Yeah, yeah. Like, why are you sharing your problem with me? So like, where are you?
Not to be crass about pregnancy.
Yeah.
It's a very serious thing, especially when you've only been dating somebody a couple weeks.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, where are you? Like, she wouldn't hit in the room.
Oh.
She didn't know how I was going to respond. She doesn't know me. Yeah. Like, she really doesn't know me. And it was just like, and she's
a
like,
whole episode for another podcast is how well should you know somebody before
getting them pregnant?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, so I'm like, she's like, are you mad? I'm like, no, like I was just like, whoa. Throughout the day, like the reality of the situation started to set in. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And I still loathe the relationship that I have with my father. I try and continue to try to make it better. Some days it's like, hey, this is cool. Like, we don't have a shitty relationship, so I'll accept that. And there's other times where it's just all like, my life would be so much simpler if you weren't here. So when the reality of I was going to be someone's father set in that afternoon, I had the internal conversation with myself of, you have to fucking stop this. Whatever my own bullshit has been, like, yeah. I have to stop this. What is something I could do right now that's going to help me feel better about stopping this? And it's, be honest. And I told her every fucking thing that I never wanted anyone to know. All the fucking skeletons of closets. Literally, I was like, you need to know this shit.
Was right? This poor girl sitting there like, what the fuck, man?
Oh, yeah. Like, it was crazy, right? Like, literally, like, I cried like a bitch. Just like, told her fucking shit that I thought I prayed would die with me.
Wow.
Like, still, she's the only person that knows a lot of this stuff. And I told her everything. And I was like, and at the end of it, I was like, I need you to know that if you decide to move forward and have this baby, like, this is the shit show that's led up to this moment.
Wow.
And this is who I am. And I don't want you to think I'm someone I'm not.
Right.
And it was crazy. And that was the most transformative experience of my life.
That's good.
Unfortunately, we didn't even, so that's not my son, Hayden. Like, that pregnancy is not him. She ended up having an ectopic pregnancy.
Oh, yeah.
So they saw it determined, but we decided like we were going to get married and we stuck with it.
Nice.
And like all our friends thought we were crazy. Like, oh, like you guys, you're going to get divorced. Like, why are you getting married? She's not having the baby, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's this whole thing. We're the only ones still together, right? 12 years later, you know, we're fucking doing our things and I couldn't be any happier.
Fuck all y'all.
Yeah, for sure. But it was crazy. Like, it was, you know, so sometimes that motivation doesn't have to come from within. There's an external factor, you know, that'll lead you to it. But it's the best thing you can do, you know, is to get that weight off your shoulders. If there's things that you're concerned with, like partnering up with a friend or a family member, someone that you can be honest with and have productive dialogue with, or just being able to vent, you know, is a very cathartic experience. And when you get that bullshit out of your way, you're able to start working on laying new bricks, you know, to whatever this path of success that you're seeking.
Sure. So I think what Corey's really trying to say in the overall is, if you're struggling to build good habits and change your life, go get a girl pregnant. Or if you're a girl, for our female listeners out there, all three of you, we watch the demographics very closely.
Yes.
Find some dude in a bar and have a baby with him.
That's where we found each other.
Yeah. Jesus, this is the most cliche podcast I've ever done in my life.
Dude.
Yeah. So we're definitely not saying anything like that whatsoever. Maybe get your workout game a little stronger before you decide to have a baby with a random hookup. But good for you, buddy, that it worked out. I know what you're saying, though, because I know how important your son is to you. I've seen you with him. And so I can picture what that moment was in your life where you're like, I don't want to be the fuck up that my father was. I don't want to perpetuate this cycle, which, Jesus, that's a whole podcast in and of itself. We can write that down for future things of how to be better than your parents. And you did that, and you epitomized that. And how many people can't? How many people can't break the cycle of drug use? How many people can't break the cycle of all these really detrimental things to raising a healthy child, even if it's just verbal abuse or an emotional abuse or physical abuse and stuff like that? Jeez, my voice just cracked like a fucking 12-year-old there. Seriously, folks, I'm not going through puberty right now. It's just these allergies, COVID, that I have. So we really, I mean, that's a huge thing, but short of having a baby, I think one of the things we want to talk about now is how to change habits. Now that we've identified their habits that are productive and those are great and keep on with those and share those with people and what your secret for success is. But if we're really talking about how to change unproductive habits and how to change things that are holding us back, how do we go about doing that? And some of the stuff from the book, that are really important, the power of habits, is identifying your routine. So there's kind of three points to it. If we're talking about that cue, routine, reward, that habit loop, there's really three key, I'm sorry, not three components. There's the components of changing that would be from turning poor habits into productive ones is reshaping habits, figuring out that habit loop, experiment with rewards, isolate the cue, and then have a plan as well, is kind of what the book lays out as far as changing stuff. So I think it's really important to kind of break those down for people, because that was the most important part of the book, was kind of the end of, he lays out all of this stuff for habits. And I'm talking, the book is so awesome because it opens your eyes to habits that you don't even know you have. I mean, it goes into marketing and how people are using habits to drive marketing. It goes over the story of how they created the Febreze and the marketing campaign behind it. Febreze as a product almost died on the vine because they couldn't figure out how to market it. Even though it's this magical product that really actually encapsulates smells and makes them go away, they couldn't market it properly. And what they actually figured out by watching videos of people walk like cleaning was, people have a habit at the end of cleaning a room. They would actually film people in their homes cleaning and what they were doing at the end. And one of the marketers caught on to the fact that these men and women, when they were done cleaning, smiled to themselves. The reward for them was the clean room. As they walked out of the room, they were proud. And so Febreze's marketing campaign prior to that focused on eliminating smells. They actually filmed, I think it was like a forest ranger or something like that. She got sprayed by skunks all the time. Like, I think she was even studying skunks. The poor girl couldn't date. Her house smelled like skunks. She smelled like skunk. And so she was mortified at her smell. And so they were building a campaign based around how people feel, like eliminating smells. And it just wasn't selling. And what they realized was the reward for cleaning, for the people that enjoy cleaning, was the act of it being clean. And so that's what they focused their marketing campaign on, was this is your reward. You spray it and you walk out of the room and it smells nice and you leave. And so, and that's why it's a multi-billion dollar product. I think it was like $256 million when they finally turned this shit around. So the book really lays out all of these habits and how habits are used against us. Habits are used in marketing. So almost the whole book is just opening your eyes to the power of habits, good and bad. And then basically the final chapter is, now that we've identified this and what habits are and are not, because they are far deeper and far more powerful than you even think they are. Again, to that, like, how do I start the car and put it in reverse and drive down the street? Those are all habits you've formed that you don't even think about when it's happening. It just occurs. And so if we have habits that are occurring, and his example that the author used for himself is, while he was writing his this book, he would get up every day in the middle of the afternoon, go to the cafeteria and buy a cookie and eat it. And he's obviously gaining weight as a result of it. So he had to figure out how to turn that around. So those things that he laid out were for turning poor habits into productive ones and reshaping habits was identifying the routine, experimenting with rewards, isolating the cue, and then having a plan. So that first one is identifying the routine. What is it that you're doing and what do you want to change? So give me an example, buddy, of one of the routines that you can think of off the top of your head that you want to change right now, that you know is not putting you where you want it to be.
Probably my end of night routine, like just before going to bed, in the sense that I will continue to do whatever thing it is I'm doing, whether it's like watching TV or playing video games or something. I will do that to the point of where I'm so tired that I don't want to take care of anything between when I decide I'm done doing that and I want to go lay in bed. Mm-hmm. Like, I hit like the sweet spot, and I justify it in the sense of I'll be able to fall asleep quickly and not lay there restless. And, you know, I'll need to get up at a certain time. Right. And so for me, I will not do the things like, I'll forego like brushing my teeth at night sometimes, you know, because it's just like, I just want to go to bed. Or I won't take the dogs out knowing at 3 o'clock in the morning, my wife's going to get up, and then tomorrow she's going to be irritated because she had to get up in the middle of the night because the dogs, because I didn't take them out. Right. And so it's a very selfish habit, and it's a very non-productive habit that I have of taking things so far that I don't leave any room for me to do the things that I need to do. Mm-hmm. And then that just creates a potential domino effect of her getting up late or me having to get up in the middle of the night, which just, it screws everything up, right? If you ever had a kid or a puppy, right? It's just, you know,
I have both.
not being on your own schedule.
Yeah.
Can be problematic.
Sure.
You know? And so it's why do I continue to choose to take it that far until the point where I'm so tired that I don't want to do anything else, fully knowing that that's not going to be good for me or my wife.
So your end of night routine right now is just occupying your mind with something non-productive, but stimulating and soothing and all that. It's just a brain checkout thing. And we can all do it. I use social media as that. I scroll it. I use YouTube in the evening. So I'm doing very similar things, but I think we can all relate to something like that, as your routine at the end of the night is not what you want it to be. And as it stands right now, it's gaming probably until you feel exhausted, and then shutting it off and staggering to bed. And you remind me of that scene from Old School when Will Ferrell gets shot in the neck and with the dart, he's just struggling around. You just fall into bed and you're just like, and so that's where you are.
Oh, yeah.
People that have seen the movie.
No. And my wife hates it too, because, she knows I'm coming to bed. She's still awake. Mm-hmm. And she's like, hey, did you do this or that? And I'll just fucking ignore her until I just hop in the bed. And she knows. Yeah, and she knows. She's like, I'm not getting up. Once I hit the bed, like, I'm not, nothing's going to happen.
Right.
So talking about changing the habit, I guess the productive side of this is recognizing that that's been a problem for me. Mm-hmm. She sends me a text message that she's going to bed. Mm-hmm. And so she'll be like, hey, can you please do these things? And then it's like, okay, I've recognized it. I understand that I have the responsibility to do this. Mm-hmm. And then I'm 9 times more likely to actually get whatever that shit is that she's asking me to take care of.
All right.
Before I go to bed. So,
all right. So that's your routine. So if we're going to experiment with rewards as this second part, one of the things that the book talked about was rewards are powerful because they satisfy our cravings. And then a couple other sentences in there. And then most cravings are like this, obvious in retrospect, but incredibly hard to see when we are under their sway. So trying different rewards for a period of time to test which craving is driving the routine. And then you jot down the first 3 things that come to mind after the new reward. And we'll talk about that in a second. So right now, experimenting with your rewards. If that is your routine and we're trying to change it, what is the reward that you think at the end of this right now? If you can think of it, what is your reward for gaming?
So, Noel, so I'm currently practicing this, right? So the change is her sending me the message and me recognizing, okay, these are things she's communicated that are important to her and us to be taken care of. And in turn, she's given me what I can't get from anyone else, which is affection, right? So everyone has like their own love languages and stuff. And so mine's like words of affirmation and touch and stuff like that. So the more support that she gets, and if she's trusting that I'm going to do those things, then it's easier for her to fall asleep. She gets,
but let me back up even before that.
Yeah.
Your routine was gaming until you're so exhausted, yes, that you want to go to bed.
Yep.
What do you think the reward in that was? Not what you're now reshaping that for, and you're using these, because that'll actually tie in with our next point here. But that actual act that was detrimental to your relationship and your health.
Just entering a place of not having to be cognitively present. Just kind of like just, you know, playing games and interacting with people online to where I'm not having to be present in the things that I need to be responsible of. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like escape to this other place where I'm not thinking about whether or not I can do laundry, what my next day is. I'm totally immersed in whatever this other thing is.
Yeah.
And then hitting that wall and then going to sleep, right? So I don't come out of whatever that state is of, you know, ignorance, I guess is a simple way of putting it, but you know,
I like dopamine bliss kind of thing, you know, where it's stimulation
it's that good, but it's just,
well, maybe you're not a good player. I don't know. Never seen you game. Maybe I'll sit here with some goggles on and watch you game at your house VR. And we kind of like hang out, but not really hang out. That's a VR geek reference. Sorry. I don't game, but, sorry, buddy. I'm not really trying to make fun of you for being a gamer. I think gaming is a very stimulating thing in and of itself. I've never seen a boring game. Like, video games in and of themselves are stimulating, all of them, whether it's Tetris or fucking Call of Duty, right? Like, visually, sonically, it's stimulation. So whether you get used to it or not, it's still a high level of stimulation for you, which in that stimulation, maybe it's shutting off certain points of your brain and it's allowing you to like let go of the daily, whatever it is, it's doing something for you.
No, what it's doing for me is it turns off the white noise. I'm one of those people that overthink things, right?
Yeah.
I'll analyze conversations. I'll be thinking about problems. I'll think about what's coming to tomorrow. And so it's hard because I'm always kind of responding to that fight or flight response of just there's shit coming at me constantly. Mm-hmm. And pretty cerebral when it comes to this thing. So I never stop thinking about it. Mm. You know, I'm not one of those people that can just walk away from a situation, but like, I don't give a shit about it.
Sure.
Like I can't do that. I can't just check out.
You obsess about it kind of.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I'll analyze what I did or what my contributions to the situation was. I make any mistakes. Did they make mistakes? You know, take into consideration that person and their background and the things they have and our other previous interactions. Next thing you know, I've spent 2.5 hours thinking about a fucking 5-minute conversation.
So if right. you tried to go to bed prior to this, prior to your kind of reshaping this yeah. without gaming, that is what would be going through your mind would just be
oh, without a doubt.
The day's events.
Yeah.
But so this allows you to just kind of numb all that out, put yourself in a kind of like catatonic state, and then you get so fatigued because it's probably pushing into later hours and you oh, know yeah. you're going to get up at some ungodly hour in the morning that no human ever should. And so you go, okay. And you fatigue yourself to where now your brain is shut off. You have just enough like bandwidth to stagger into bed and flop it face down and you're out, whether your wife would be saying anything to you at all. So the reward could be in essence of being able to sleep soundly, like switch off.
Yeah.
You knew you were going to struggle with all of these other thoughts. And now you're like, I did this. I interacted with us. So there's all kinds of rewards within the thing. But then the end result also is boom, I can lay in bed and fall asleep. We won't get into all the like actual science behind blue light stimulation prior to trying to sleep and stuff, because I'm just as fucking terrible as you are. But looking at screens, looking at TVs, and looking at our phones prior to sleeping within a couple hours is absolutely detrimental to actually sleeping. But you're using it as a hack, and you found how to maybe overstimulate yourself enough to actually become tired. So that maybe could be the reward in and of itself now, even though now we're identifying new rewards, which is that second step, which is experimenting with rewards, because your reward was this. So for the author that was eating the cookie, he's like, well, is it the cookie that's the reward? I don't know. So he had to actually start experimenting with stuff. So because those rewards are powerful and they satisfy our cravings, what you're trying to do is try different rewards for a period of time to test which craving is driving that routine. So what he suggested was jotting down the first three things that come to mind after your new reward. So your new reward now is your wife sends you a text of things to do before you go to bed, right? So he would suggest jotting down the first three things that come to mind when you receive that text, because as you laid out, your rewards, which are positive affirmation, touch, things like that. So that text is now leading you to gain those more than you gaming till you're damn near ready to fall asleep, ignoring the things that your duties that you had at night, and going to bed knowing your wife was going to be pissed at you, right? So you're trying different rewards.
It's a path of success. So I'm a person that likes to plan. I don't like being surprised by things. And so if she tells me in advance, hey, these are the things I'm doing, cool. Then I can integrate that into what I'm doing. I'm going, okay, I'm playing. Okay. I know that I'm going to need to stop at this point so I can take care of those things. And in turn, I feel good. I feel like I was a good husband. Mm-hmm. And in turn, she feels that I've prioritized the things that she wants. And in turn, she's more apt to give me some form of affection, you know, or
right.
just improve our overall quality of our relationship. And then, so that's become like the reward. And so now it's trying to figure out, how does she do a good job of communicating things that she needs and setting the proper expectation with me in a way right. that resonates with me so I can respond accordingly, right? Because that's been the other difficult part, is how does she emphasize importance of things, and am I receiving it in the way in which she's communicating it? And so we found through text message, it's very simple. Mm-hmm. It's here's a fucking list of the
shit. What size fucking house do you have where you have to text message each other all the time?
No, like she doesn't want to wait. Like, so if I'm in one of those games having a conversation with people, she's just, it's easier for her to be like, all right, I'm going to bed and here's
all the shit. Does she log into the game and text you through the game?
No.
Yeah, that'd be a way better hack. If she was a player that just popped up and she's like, hey, Corey, before you come to bed with me.
Right.
Yeah. You're playing like Sims or something like that. I don't know. I don't know anything about games. Yeah. So sorry. I'm sitting here thinking my brain isn't locked up. I'm actually pondering a few things there. So I could also make the strong argument, not to get like off topic, but I could make the strong argument that if some of these things are supposed to be done every night anyways, then you need to start building habits for them. Taking the dog out. Well, that's every night. That's not a like, hey, can you take it out tonight? Is that something she hopes you do
No. So it's a shared responsibility, right? There's times she often actually goes to bed later than me.
Oh, okay.
Right. So in the rare event that she goes to bed, I'd probably say it's maybe like 40% of the time she goes to bed before me.
Okay.
In that situation, generally I'll be up an hour or two later than she is. So it's like, hey, this is 2 hours sooner that I won't have to take the dogs out or what have you. So it depends on the situation. So it's not a consistent expectation.
Okay.
And so that's where within our relationship where I'm just like, hey, like don't drop this shit on me when I'm coming to bed. Like,
yeah,
you know, like I did what was good for me so I could be able to just walk in here and go to sleep.
Right.
And not lay here until 1 o'clock in the morning thinking about all the shit I got to do.
Sure.
You know, so if you want me to do these things, I need you to communicate them far enough in advance so I can make a plan to take care of it because that's just how my brain works.
Yeah. You have a very specific brain.
I like your
brain. I'm not going to lie. It works pretty well for us as being quasi partners in no financial way whatsoever, but buddy partners, I guess you could say. Yeah. Cause your brain functions completely different than mine on that. And I can see where that would work for you and not work for you as well. And I think to some extent we're all kind of that way. If we have our own little scheme for the day and we, again, then, well, this would be a communication podcast down the road. If we haven't communicated that with anybody, nobody knows your little like plan for the day. And so, I find myself at times frustrated because it's like, well, I had my series of events for the day and this is how I planned it out. And then something comes along that Liz needs me to do or my daughter needs me to do. And it's like, fuck, I didn't plan that into my day. So I think we can all feel that what Corey's talking about to some extent. So you're experimenting with those different rewards of, okay, so now when we do those things, you like the outcome better. So it's reward stuff. So one of the things he's recommending is jot down the first three things that come to mind with after the new reward and try different rewards too. Like trying to figure out what it works for you as far as this reward, as in his analogy was the cookie thing. Is the cookie for him the reward? Or is it the fact that while he's eating that cookie, he was actually talking to coworkers? Or was it that he was actually getting up and walking and seeing outdoors? So he's trying different rewards. He actually went like on a walk instead of when he felt the urge for the cookie, he went on a walk instead. When he felt the urge for the cookie, he went and talked to a coworker instead. When he felt the urge for the cookie, he did something else. So he's trying all of these things and seeing, is the cookie itself the reward? And if not, then what actually is the reward? Also, what he felt was really important was after you do that, writing those three things down, he set an alarm for 15 minutes. And after 15 minutes, he said, do you still feel like, ask yourself, do you still feel the urge for the original thing? So 15 minutes after he did that new reward, he thought about, I want to get a cookie today. So wrote down his three things on what he was doing and how he felt that the first three things that came to mind after he felt this new reward thing. He took a walk. How did he feel? He wrote three things down. 15 minutes later, he checked in. Do I still have the craving for the cookie? Because if it's truly the cookie, it'll probably still be there. If it's not, then he's finding the difference is he's learning that, is it the reward that I was craving or is it this other thing that I'm recraving? But this thing is just looped into the overall fulfillment of what I'm actually craving, right? So then it becomes really important to then isolate the cue. So you want to identify the behaviors ahead of time to see if there's patterns, because there's patterns in all of this stuff. And psychology has determined that through scientific study that the cues are all based on really five kind of similar things. And so if you can identify those behaviors and see the patterns in them, you'll be able to help change these cues. So the behavior patterns are location, time, emotional state, other people, and immediately preceding action. So what he recommended was writing down those five things the moment the urge hits. Do that for a few days to find patterns. So what he did was I have the urge for the cookie. What time of day is it? Where am I at? So location and time. Emotional state. How is he feeling? Is he feeling low? Is he feeling happy? Is he feeling whatever? Other people. Is there other people associated with that? Is there other people present? Is he thinking about other people? What? So is that a driving factor? And then the immediately preceding action. Did he read an email? Did he get a phone call? Like some of these, again, in trying to identify the cue, if your pattern is overeating, or in your case, your pattern is gaming until you're exhausted. So figuring out those things, location, it's in your home, time of day, it's always at the end of the night. You're not trying to game in the middle of the day, I'm assuming, unless you're an all-day gamer. I don't know. Your emotional state. Are you happy? Are you sad? Are you low? Are you high? I would think it could even be a great exercise for you with the eating stuff. And for me, for the sleeping stuff, when am I more apt to want to go to sleep when Liz does? Probably when I'm in a different state of mind. But if you start writing these five things down and you start tracking those things over the course of a day, what he did, he actually in the book lays out 3 days worth of answers to those questions. And they were the actual notes that he took while he was doing it. And so he very quickly saw the pattern. It's at between 2 and 3 every day that this happens. It's these things are preceding that. And by doing that, he realized the cookie was not the thing. It was actually the interaction with other people. So now he can start to formulate a plan. And we'll talk about that here in a second to change that. So those are really important. And I'll read those again for people that are trying to write this stuff down and help with that. Or I really recommend you grab the book and read through it and then check this out in the last chapter. So it's the location, it's time, it's your emotional state, other people, and immediately preceding action. Write down those five things when you have that urge, and you'll start to see those patterns emerge. Maybe your tendency to overeat or to eat an unhealthy snack is when you had a disagreement with your spouse, or like there's a lot of things that are happening. And again, I think that's where the power of this book comes in is the habits that we have are responses to all of these other cues, but we really can't see the cues because we're only looking at the end result. I eat shit because of this. And here's one I can point out specifically because it happens all the time. Liz is one of the she is the healthiest eater that I know, and yet buys the pretzel bites, peanut butter pretzel bites from Costco. God damn her. And they're just amazing. And so something like that, a snack in our cabinet is there. And I very rarely will eat those throughout the day here and there, but it's kind of when I'm just, eh. But where I find that I eat it the most is when we have sessions with clients and I get done talking to them and then I'm done with my part, which is usually the talking because it's what I do. And Liz is actually good at the actual dog training. And so she gets up and starts working with them. And I'll immediately walk into our kitchen because that's kind of where I stand to get out of everybody's way. And I'll open that cabinet and grab a handful of them. And I honestly can, as I'm working through this mentally, the cue is I'm done talking. My stress is done. That's hard for me to do. And so I did my sales pitch. We're done. Now I can do that. And it's just every time I walk by that. So I can write those things down over the course of a couple of days and go, it's not the pretzel bites because I don't do that when they're not there. So it's not that I'm craving those pretzel bites. It's just I fulfilled that big cycle of stuff, which is the cue, the routine, and the reward. My reward is probably not the pretzel bites. It's soothing myself now that I'm done talking and stuff. So writing those five things down the moment the urge hits and do that for a few days until you see patterns. So think about that. Like, share some of the thoughts that you're thinking right now of like those five things when it comes to your gaming in the evening.
I think the gaming's hard because it's really like one of those things that doesn't require much effort and it's more of a passive dialogue. You know, it's a social interaction. You know, it's me for me, gaming is a great way to maintain relationships with friends that no longer live in California. Mm-hmm. They're not local. Mm-hmm. You know, so the ability to do something together that's kind of just mind-numbing, if you will, but we still get to interact and joke and bust each other's balls, you know, mm-hmm. as if we went mountain biking or something, mm-hmm. right? So it's same type of interaction. So it's not requiring too much, but as you're going through these things, actually I was thinking about when I'm dealing with a really difficult situation when it comes to work, or if I feel that I've accomplished a difficult task, I will immediately I'll get up from my desk and I'll cruise into the kitchen. And I was thinking about, I'm like, why do I always do this? You know? So if my wife decides to go to Costco and buys a giant bag of high chews, my reward now becomes the high chews. If it's not there, I'll probably walk out of the kitchen without anything. Mm-hmm. But if there's something that's convenient and that has any form of appeal to me, mm-hmm. then I'm taking that with me. And the more wins I have in a day, the more rewards I give myself,
yeah,
which goes against what I'm trying to do with, you know, generating better eating habits. Right. So it's interesting when you're, cause as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about like, what are some interesting patterns that I've recognized within myself and what is motivating me to do those things, you know? And so when I run into that situation, I think what I'm doing with work and food and my relationship with my own kitchen, it's I'm getting out of my workspace. I'm separating myself from what it is. And then my mind is like, well, I did good. So like, don't I get something? And mm-hmm. then if that thing is right there and I don't have to think about it, versus big bag of high chews of deliciousness, then it's just all like, yep, a handful of those for me.
What the fuck is a high chew?
I'll buy you a bag of them.
Don't you dare.
I'll get you the 5-pound Costco bag. Oh,
God.
I already ordered more gummy bears.
You bastard. You know I gave one of those bags away.
Yeah.
Todd the Saw.
Yep.
I had to. I got diabetes right on the spot from you bringing those other things over here. Like, I no joke. Like I was Wilford Brimley in this bitch with those freaking bag of things. I ate the whole damn thing almost in a day. I had a headache. I had blurry. It was like, I'm not kidding. I warded off diabetes right on the spot with those things. And I looked at that other bag and I told Todd like about the gummy bears and how amazing they were. And I was like, dude, I got to give them to you. And I give myself credit. Those things sat here for several days and I never tore into them. Didn't even open the seal on them and gave them to him. Cause he's skinny and he's like riding some like no name Peloton in his house and stuff. And sorry, it's a joke. And so, yeah. Like, I digress, but don't you dare high chew. What it like? Give me just.
It's like if I remember correctly, I think it's a Japanese candy, and it's like this weird taffy like consistency, but they have like no calories, and they're just flavored like just different flavors. So you can chew on it, so I'm able to eat it for a long time, and it gives me the sensation of having something much bigger than what it actually is.
That's what she said. That was way too good. Sorry. oh, Jesus. Well, having a plan is the fourth step to this. And I think it's super important to figure, like, now that you've gone through all of those other stages of identifying the routine, experimenting with rewards, isolating your cue, and then having a plan. That's great. Now I know all of this stuff. I know, you know, why you're gaming in the evenings. I know why I'm staying awake and watching YouTube in the evenings. I know why you're eating fucking high chews and all of these, and why I'm eating the damn pretzel bites and stuff. Having a plan is really the course of action to change that stuff. Otherwise, you're just going to keep doing it. So having a plan is, you can change to a better routine by planning for the cue and choosing behavior that delivers the reward you're craving. And one of the phrases that's used in psychology is implementation intention. So what he recommends is writing down what your plan is and be specific with times, frequency, and what you will do specifically. So in his example of the cookie thing, at 3 p.m. every day, I will get up and walk to a coworker's cubicle and have a 10-minute conversation with him. Cause he figured out it wasn't the cookie, it was the interactions is what he was actually craving. And so now that he had identified that and he realized that the reward is actually the interactions, he's going to change that. And every day, specifically because he wrote that plan down, he's now satisfying that craving, which leads to a different habit. And in doing that for long enough, now the habit is, instead of getting up and going and eating a cookie, he's getting up and going and probably bothering a coworker, and it's going to change his habit. So for me in the evenings, would the habit that I am trying to change in a plan that I could write for myself, one that I've said verbally, but I haven't actually done, and we'll talk episode 10 about journaling and daily planning. This will lead directly into that because you can incorporate the two. These two episodes are going to kind of really coincide with each other, kind of our plan to do that. So if you write something like that down, specifically daily, for you, I'll say for me. So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'm going to go to bed when Liz does, no later than 11. And that would be my plan. So those days of the week, this is what I'm doing at this specific time and sticking to that. Really hard. I really don't want to go to bed at 11. And the days of the week kind of all jumble. And having that plan in place really helps you for the times where your day goes other than. So I know for me, Mondays are supposed to be kind of our day off from work, but we tend to get really busy, or we're recording podcasts or we're doing all these things, and Wednesdays, especially because it's during the middle of our work week. So it might be 9 or 10 o'clock at night before we're done with stuff. My little brain then goes, okay, so we're done with this stuff. I want to sit down. I want to have that me time that you were talking about. And I want that to roll through for a while. Well, she's ready to go to bed because she's exhausted and very pregnant now. And I want to go to bed at 10:30. I'm like, fuck, I don't want to go to bed. Like, ah, damn it. I said I'd go to bed at the same time as you on Wednesdays and Sunday, Fridays, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays. And I'm like, ah, no, it's not time yet. It's not, can we stay up another 2 hours for crying out loud? Cause I want to do my little routine, or you want to do your little gaming routine. And not that it's a little gaming routine. I'm not trying to disrespect you that way, but like the writing that plan down and sticking to it and being honest and like, holding yourself accountable for that will help for those times where it's like, well, if I want my 2 hours of YouTube watching in the evenings, and I going to go to bed at 11, well, I better be done with stuff by 9, but that can't all coincide. It's not going to work. So having that plan and working through that and being diligent to the plan will keep you accountable and honest with yourself. Make sense?
Yes, sir.
All right. I think we've beat that horse fully. And I kind of want to end with another great quote from Dan Crenshaw and Fortitude. Healthy habits create a healthy mind, and a healthy mind creates healthy people. Doing something hard is the habit of building mental calluses so that when life happens, you are better prepared for it. And I think that's super cool. When I read that quote today, as I was going through those highlighted sections, I looked at that and was like, that's awesome, because that actually kind of ties into some of our earlier podcasts too, where we've talked about like resiliency and how to harden yourself during the times when life's going to throw some shitty stuff at you. So this notion that we've talked about today of building better habits and building healthier habits and building habits that serve you better. Yeah, we can look at it and go, okay, if I want to build better eating habits because I need to lose 40 pounds, that's the thing. But in reality, I think what that quote speaks to is kind of like that earlier quote of when you're doing hard things, whether it's not eating your high chews or for me going to bed at 11 o'clock when I don't really want to, you're really building yourself to a better mental space for those unfortunate challenging life events. And so we look at that and go, okay, yeah, this is my short-term goal is to lose weight. But in reality, you're improving yourself on a lot of different fronts. And man, what a great way to inspire yourself and motivate yourself and move forward and look at what you could be 6 months from now, should you choose to just start make one change a day for a week. And then the next week, build on that change and make another change on top of that. And if you did that for 30 days, look at where you could be. Or if you changed one thing only for 30 days, because that's what you're able to commit to, look at where you could be in 6 months if you did one thing a day for 30 days. And then after 30 days, you build another thing. It's super awesome. I'll throw another book out there because I just gave it to Corey, or showed him. He took a picture of it. It's called The Greatest Salesman in the World. It's a very small little book. It's you read it super fast, but really what it is, it's the tenets of, there's 10 different things, and you can read the whole book, and then you the 10 scrolls, they're called. You read one scroll per day for 30 days. You read that one scroll for 30 days and it will ingrain that habit. And at the end of it, the premise of the book is that's what led this guy to be the greatest salesman in the world. But it's really about changing your life. And so I think no matter what book you read or what podcast you listen to or what, you'll see the overarching tenets of this. The things, they're all very similar, whether you read that book, whether you read The Power of Habits, whether you're doing any of this research on this, they're all saying the same thing in different ways. You got to start small. You have to like work on something that you can actually attain and keep at it until that thing becomes a habit. You want to learn to tie your shoes in a different fashion every day for 30 days, tie it with the bunny rabbit going through the tunnel with the ears getting looped and the thing. So I'm going to have to teach a kid how to tie shoes here again.
Are you using this because like you're going through like a refresher?
I'm going to have to. Yeah. Pretty soon this little kid, either that or she's just going to grow up wearing Tevas her whole life. And then, you know, gets made fun of in junior high for being the Teva kid. But no offense to people that still wear Tevas with socks. You're cool too. Yeah, man, that's my spiel for the day.
We should end it on Tevas with socks.
That's another t-shirt idea. Merch store coming soon. Tevas with socks. Thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate it. Episode 9. One more and we're at 10. So have a great week. Appreciate you. We'll catch you on the next one.